Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Son of Sam Chronicles. I'm Rocker Mike. We have Rob Rossi, Chris Jr., and we're welcoming back Christina, our new researcher that we had on last week where we talked about the Borelli letter. This week, we're going to be talking about the Breslin letter. And if you remember the last episode, Christina did a fantastic job of tearing that apart, the Borelli letter, and coming up with some new angles and new ideas. And we're going to do the same thing with the Jimmy Breslin letter. So hello, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, Christina. And just a little background on the Breslin letter. I printed it up here, and I know Rob just put it up as well. This was sent to the Daily News. Attention, Mr. Breslin, 220 East 42nd Street. That was the location of the Daily News at that time. And this was written by, you know, someone calling themselves the Son of Sam. And Christina, again, has a fantastic way of looking at this. So, Christina, let's start tearing this apart, because the style and the, you know, the construction of the letter is something we really got to dig into today.
Okay. Well, where do you want to start, Mike?
Well, I'll read a little bit, say, of the first sentence or two, like we did last time, okay?
Okay.
All right. It says, "Dear Mr. Jimmy Breslin," and Jimmy Breslin was a reporter for the Daily News, very popular at the time. He was a New York guy, wrote articles about the city. So he was the guy that you'd want to send this letter to. It made sense. So, "Dear Mr. Jimmy Breslin, hello from the gutters of New York City, which are filled with dog manure, vomit, stale wine, urine, and blood." What do you get out of that, Christina?
Well, I mean, if you look at the first few sentences, and if you look at the repetition of "hello from the gutters, hello from the sewers," It's written in the style of confessional poetry, and it's also written in the style of mixing the sacred and profane, which is a style that Walt Whitman used, as well as Allen Ginsberg.
I've heard of that.
Allen Ginsberg's Howl.
Right. Yeah. But what about the reference to the gutters?
Well, I know the reference to the gutters is a reference to Untermeyer Park, because right. The area was called the gutters. But gutters is also an allusion to Aphrodite. She would have been the Roman equivalent of, you know, Venus. And she was the
a Greek goddess, right, Christina?
Yeah, she was the goddess of the gutters. It would be considered like Venus Placida.
Okay. Now, Chris, what do you feel about that? You think that's accurate, or what about the gutters with Untermeyer Park? You think that's more of what it could be, or what's your opinion?
I really believe that, generally speaking, the most simplest, you know, answer is the answer. So I do believe that he was referring, in the very least, to the paths that led to and fed into Untermeyer Park, or Untermeyer Park for that matter. But when Christina raises some of these other ideas, it's hard not to look at it and say, okay, that makes sense too, especially right. considering, you know, the fact that, you know, we have someone with a similar name who was, you know, shot by David Berkowitz or by the cult, Judy Placido. You know, you start thinking about it, you start thinking about the symbolism in the letters, and you start thinking about the people that were shot at or killed by David or this cult, and it gets, you know, the coincidences start to add up, and you start to look a little bit closer. You know, I think Christina ultimately just sees this from a totally different angle, because she's not from here. She's not jaded. She hasn't She's looking at it with a fresh look, so to speak.
Well, right. I think it's also important to note, like the history of Untermeyer Park and the statues that are in it. I mean, it's a park that's full of classical statues and art.
A lot of Sumerian structures, right?
Yes, but also Sumerian structures, a lot of the gods are equivalent to Roman and Greek gods.
Right. And then you also have the two actual Roman pillars that are there that were brought over from Rome. Okay.
So, I mean, just because, gutters is a symbol for Untermeyer Park doesn't mean that the two ideas need to be mutually exclusive, because you keep seeing patterns of Greek gods and goddesses being incorporated into the letters and even the symbol, because Aphrodite's in the symbol.
Right, which we're going to get into. And one thing that just kind of occurred to me when thinking of the last show with the Borelli letter, there was a lot of double entendres, right? Things meaning two things, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, this is another example of that, I would think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's
so you mentioned something about confessional poetry. What is that exactly for the viewers?
It's really just a style of poetry. I mean, it would be like, I don't know really how to explain it. You'd have to read Walt Whitman and Allen Ginsberg to understand it, but I mean, it would be just like giving in a confession, but it's written out in modernist style where it doesn't necessarily rhyme, but there's a lot of repetition as well. Like you see where it says, hello from the gutters, hello from the sewers.
Well, I'm familiar with Howl. Okay. Uh-huh. And some of the beat poetry. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah. Okay. I would say that's an equivalent. And I think it's also interesting to compare Allen Ginsberg's Howl, just because of the dog imagery, and David Berkowitz was on Inside Edition and said that they were worshiping Moloch, and Moloch is mentioned in Allen Ginsberg's Howl repeatedly, and it's a reference to the U.S. It's an allusion to the U.S. government.
Right, like the government is called Moloch.
Yes, but I mean, Moloch's also an astrology cult.
Right. All right, let's go a little bit further. And then it says, hello from the sewers of New York City, which swallow up these delicacies when they are washed away by the sweeper trucks. Hello from the cracks in the sidewalks of New York City and from the ants that dwell in these cracks and feed on the dried blood of the dead that has seeped into these cracks. What's being said there?
Well, you know, like with dog manure, vomit, stale wine, urine, and blood, those are all symbols for the occult, also witchcraft. Like you can look at dog manure, that would be considered, manure is like a form of transmutation. Vomit within, I'm trying to think of how to explain this. It would be part of a purging process where a person allows themselves to be cleansed from like internal substances in order to let themselves become possessed by a god or gods. You know, there's the stale wine reference, which that looks like a symbol for Dionysus. Urine was used in witchcraft.
Right.
Also, and so is blood. And most of these references that I'm referring to, if any of the viewers want to refer to it, come from a book called The Book of Symbols, and it's by Tashin.
Okay. Yeah.
It gives a further explanation for how all of these apply to witchcraft and the occult.
Right.
What were you going to say, Chris?
Yeah, I wanted to just add the symbols that she's talking about, they come up obviously in this letter, but you know, if you start researching ritualistic magic, you'll start seeing these same elements seep into that into those types of into rituals, you know, that have been talked about, observed and documented over the years.
Yeah, I mean, not to interrupt you, Chris, but like one example for urine, they at one point in history, they thought, in witchcraft, they thought it was a love potion.
Right.
So people would drink it?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And they would, and drinking blood, I mean, that's probably as old as the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but you see elements of this in other people discussing either them, you know, being involved in Satanism or some sort of a ritualistic cult. But, you know, I just felt that was important to add. And one other thing I just wanted to say, when I was going through the letter with Christina this week, that first paragraph is really powerful writing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess, I'm looking back to my high school years, you know, and there were a couple of kids that were really good writers, and you could tell they just could do it. I'm having a hard time believing that, you know, David Berkowitz wrote that paragraph at his age in the state of mind that he was in at that time. You know, I don't know. I mean,
again, we're seeing, you know, like the last letter, we're seeing examples of, you know, higher education here, higher learning, and occult symbolism that, you know, it's hard to believe that Berkowitz, you know, he might have penned the letter, like we said last time with the other one, but, you know, didn't come up with all these ideas.
Right.
Well, you know, you can compare and contrast his other poetry too, because he has a poetry book out.
That's true.
Yes, he does.
By the Senders. And I don't think that he's incapable of imbuing poetry with symbolism, because I've compared and contrasted, but like there's a difference in how he writes in those books compared to this. This looks highly edited and polished.
Yes.
And it looks like something someone in their fourth year in college would write, or somebody who was working on a master's in creative writing. I just don't think he wrote. I don't think he wrote it.
Right, right. Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. You know, just like the last letter, you know, it seems like it's something that was not in his style to write in, or something he wasn't going to think of all the way through.
Yeah.
But in the next sentence, Christina, okay, I find this interesting. It says, JB, Jimmy Breslin, I'm just dropping you a line to let you know that I appreciate your interest in those recent and horrendous 44 caliber killings. I also want to tell you that I read your column daily, and I find it quite informative. In this paragraph, it's That's obvious he's complimenting him. Okay,
yeah.
You know, he's kind of kissing butt a little bit, right?
Yeah.
What do you think is behind that? What was the reason? I mean, he didn't have to do that. He could have just spoke about what he wanted to speak about, but he kind of threw that in there. What was that about, you think?
Oh, I mean, saying, I also want to tell you that I read your column daily and find it quite informative. I mean, it just says that he's following the case, and whoever wrote it seems to be a little bit of a narcissist. I'm not calling David Berkowitz a narcissist, because I don't necessarily think that he wrote this, but it does come across like somebody that's a little involved with themselves and is a serial killer.
it would be a sign of somebody that was a serial killer to be that way.
I mean Zodiac wrote letters, BTK wrote letters, and they love to follow themselves in the paper. So did Jack the Ripper.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Berkowitz said that he used to read about the articles all the time. He had, you know, newspapers, all the different newspapers,
mm-hmm.
you know, which, you know, when we had done other shows, that came up with, you know, clues as to, you know, how much he knew about each of these murders. You know what I mean? Remember the Forest Hills one, Rob? Remember that?
Yeah. I still think that one, to me, to this day, I still think that that woman that got killed coming off the train, that was like a total mob hit.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to get off track and talk about that too much, but you're right. I mean, there's definitely – but the point of what I was trying to say is I think, you know, Berkowitz we know that he was reading about himself.
Yeah.
So this is a way, I guess, to interject himself even further into it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right, Christina?
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, it's also kind of, you know, it's, I think it's kind of complimenting Jimmy Breslin's narcissism too.
Yeah, he was. That he was. Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, I'm getting this letter from the Son of Sam. Yeah. And he's telling me he's reading my column every day. And if you, and I mean, we'll get into this later, but if you look at the nicknames that he gave everybody, I mean, even the, even Jimmy Breslin's nickname fits in with the different monikers. He was known as what, the Count of Queens Boulevard?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's kind of playing to Jimmy Breslin's narcissism too.
Right.
I'll be honest.
I do like him, how he called him JB.
Informal.
I read your stuff. I like what you're putting out there. Like, it's a compliment. It's definitely fitting to his ego.
That is an interesting observation, because he goes from calling him dear Mr. Jimmy Breslin and being kind of formal and polished to the next paragraph, hey JB, I'm dropping you a line, which is
if you want to continue on here, he's still informal. He says, tell me, Jim, what will you have for July 29th? You can forget about me if you like, because I don't care for publicity. Now, July 29th was shortly, that would have been the year anniversary, right? Of the first,
the date Donna Loria was shot right
in the Bronx.
So the NYPD suspected, as well as Breslin, that he might attack again.
Right. And they had that big dragnet through the whole city. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
If once you read past that, you read that about Jim, then he gets into the whole that she was a sweet girl, and then the thirsty lad thing. That's pretty fascinating, right there.
It says next. I'm sorry, you're going to say something, Christine?
I mean, I don't feel like I read this the same way as everybody else, where they're looking at this and they're saying, man, that's the creepiest thing I've ever read. I read it and I think, wow, he's being a real smart ass.
Yeah.
I kind of get that too. I mean, there's some, like, you know, just the fact he's calling him JB and Jim, and, you know, it's like he is being a wise ass.
Yeah, because I mean, if you read it in context, you know, there's a lot of eating imagery where it says, tell me, Jim, what will you have for July 29th? It almost sounds like he's eating. Or he asks him what he's going to eat. And if you refer back to the first letter, it refers in the same area with Donna Loria. It refers to, like, fair game and tasty meats, which people, and hunting, which people have associated with some of the, you know, with Artemis, but also with, you know, the satanic sacrifices. But I mean, really, ultimately, you put this in context with that, with fair game and what Jimmy Breslin did for a living. I mean, he was a tabloid journalist, and what he did every day really was character assassinations of people.
Yeah.
By saying, you know, you can forget about me because I don't like publicity. It's kind of like saying, well, you don't get to talk about me, go assassinate somebody else's character. But it's also playing on words that, you know, that these were likely hits and they were assassinations, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's also implied that she was known to the murderer or murderers. She was a very, very sweet girl. I think when we were on the phone, Christina, that line right there just makes me think of Manson's interview with Ronald Reagan's son back in the day, where he starts talking about Sharon Tate. He's like, "Oh, poor Sharon." I don't know. I realize the two, you know, aren't related in that respect, but it just, I don't know. I mean, we know Manson knew Sharon Tate to some degree, at least in passing, I think. I don't know. It just it just rings that way to me in this piece.
Oh, he knew Sharon Tate. I mean, witnesses saw him at her house.
Right. Yeah, he was there before the killings.
Yep.
Yeah. He was witness there.
Okay.
But let me read this. So, however, you must not forget Donna Loria, and you cannot let the people forget her either. She was a very, very sweet girl, but Sam's a thirsty lad, and he won't let me stop killing until he gets his fill of blood. Christina. The use of the word lad, what do you think of that?
I mean, it sounds Scottish.
Yep. Right. It's not like, kind of a New York thing to say.
It sounds like Sam's a child. I mean, whenever I think of lad, I think of a boy.
He could be talking. He could just be kind of talking in a way that he refers to him as a lad, but he's not a lad.
Remember in the previous letter, we had that other Scott Irish slang with Sonny Boy and Oot and
That's true.
So it's popping up again here, and that kind of goes back to, you know, the possibility that old Druid connection, as far as Mr. Real Estate is concerned, that just sits in the back of my head every time I see, you know, the term lad used and the Sonny Boy reference in the previous letter.
Right.
I do want to correct you, Mike. It may not be common in Queens, but on McLean Avenue in Yonkers, that type of language is used very often. I think there's more Irish on McLean Avenue than there are in Ireland at this point.
You're right. What I was referring to was, that's true. What I was referring to was, you know, just from a native New Yorker.
No, I know.
It could have been an Irish or Scottish person, you know, living here now. Yeah.
No, I agree. I was only joking, but
nah, it's cool. You're allowed to correct me once per show. That's
you know what the thing is. Everything leads back to the blood, because you know, for a lot of cults, especially like Satan worshiper, the whole thing with Satan is the more blood you give him, like supposedly the more power you have.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of blood. So
I mean, spilling blood was one of the obvious motives if you're looking at the cult angle or the Satanism angle, Luciferian angle, however you want to phrase it. There's no doubt. I think you're correct.
What about Christina? What about a non-satanic angle with the blood, like Dionysian? Or is there a reference with that?
Not that I'm really aware of. I mean, you can look at it and you can say, okay, now the void has been filled. A void would be representative of Dionysus, because, you know, there's a possession.
Right. Now you're referring to the next paragraph.
You have a void and then it being filled with blood. So you can look at it that way. Yeah.
Okay. And that's part of the next paragraph where he says, Mr. Breslin, sir. Now, here he's being formal again. Mr. Breslin, sir, don't think that because you haven't heard from him, you haven't heard from me for a while, that I went to sleep. No, rather, I am still here. Like a spirit roaming the night, thirsty, hungry, seldom stopping to rest, anxious to please Sam. I love my work. Now the void has been filled. It seems like there's some completion here. There's some kind of, like he's saying he's completing his job.
Yeah, that's interesting, considering after this, there were really only two more crime scenes. There was Placido Lupo, wasn't it on the 27th of July, which was about 28 days after this letter was written and mailed to Jimmy Breslin. And then the next one was the 31st of July.
It
seems to imply that his work's just about done and he's going to stop doing whatever he's doing.
The way this is written also almost implies that other letters were written and sent to Jimmy Breslin. He's saying just because you haven't heard from Is it from me for a while, or is it?
Yes, I haven't heard from me for a while.
That I went to sleep. No, rather I'm still here. So like I don't know. I mean, I may have known this. I mean, were other? Does anyone know this? maybe someone could comment.
Was there another letter before this to Breslin? I don't think so.
They might have sent more letters that never got released.
I don't know. I don't necessarily read it that way. It's whenever I read Mr. Breslin, sir, don't think that because you haven't heard from me for a while that I went to sleep. It could also mean that we haven't heard from him because he hasn't been killing people. There's been a gap from the time that of the Esau Suryani shooting. And there's been no activity since between April and June, there would have been about 2 months.
Yeah. I kind of tend to agree with Christina on that. I don't think it's, you know, Jimmy would have heard from him specifically from him. I think he means because you haven't heard from, you know, there hasn't been any killings. It's been quiet.
But Mike, you know what I'm getting from this letter also? I'm kind of getting, it feels like it's almost like three people telling him the story. It feels like there's more than one person. It feels like there's more, because he goes from complimenting him to they call JB, then to call him Bert. Like it's like very it's like very ADD.
What could be? What do you think, Christina?
You kind of have a point, Rob. I mean, he goes from saying Jimmy Breslin to JB to Mr. Breslin, and could be done to kind of throw him off too and disorient him because he's addressing him multiple different ways.
Yeah.
You know, they could have put their heads together and said, hey, we're going to address him different ways.
But it's making me think about what you said in the beginning of our show today, Christina, is that this looks like a heavily edited letter. So it's possible that he had, you know, maybe several different letters written and kind of picked pieces from, you know, different ones. Do you think that's possible?
It's possible, but I mean, you also compare it to the first letter and how he referred to Mr. Borelli. I mean, mm-hmm. he was very formal with Mr. Borelli and he never shifted around like he did in this letter.
Right.
With initials and using Mr. and then using the full name.
Right. Makes sense. Sure. So now it says, perhaps we shall meet face to face someday, or perhaps I will be blown away by cops with smoking 38s, whatever. If I shall be fortunate enough to meet you, I will tell you all about Sam, if you like, and I will introduce you to him. His name is Sam the Terrible. What do you get out of that?
I mean, really, the only thing I get out of the paragraph I'm looking at is there's kind of a combination of him thinking that what he's doing is fated, but also free will. I mean, like with the word shall, I mean, really, that almost implies fate. And then fortunate, you have fortune.
Right.
It's kind of all over the place. And then you have Sam the Terrible, which, I mean, the first thing I always think of whenever I think of any name of somebody the terrible, I think Ivan. Russia's Ivan the Terrible.
Ivan the Terrible, yeah.
Which is, you know, another freaking Russian reference.
Right.
I mean, there's Russian references all over in the first letter. Or
right.
References.
Mark, we know good old Michael loved his Russian titles of nobility. and the cars, I believe the last name Carr comes from, I think it was Czar or something like that, or it has something to do with the Russian.
I believe they were Ukrainian descended of some others in that, you know, Eastern European.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
You raise a good point because he says Sam the Terrible. And if he replaces Ivan with Sam and they're kind of have similar meanings with Russia, Russian aristocracy, you have a point.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know what? When he say, maybe I introduce you to Sam. You think like he was calling the his gun Sam? I'm just saying because he's.
Sounds mildly threatening. If I were Jimmy Breslin, I would have hit under my desk. But I mean,
Yeah, but he goes, if I'm telling you about, if we ever met, I would tell you about Sam. And if you like, I will introduce you to Sam the Terrible, which is like, that's totally a threat. Like,
yeah.
Who is Sam the Terrible, you know?
Yeah, I would be disturbed. Really,
Ivan the Terrible was a czar. So by saying Sam the Terrible, he's saying Sam Carr.
Yeah, you have a point.
Sam the czar.
Maybe.
You have a good point, Chris. I mean, I didn't think Sam about it Carr. That way, but yeah.
I mean, that's what he said. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
that's what's supposed, but it's a threat either way. But
I'm just a big.
I didn't look at it that way before, but yeah, you're right.
I'm an idiot from Portchester, New York. You know, I don't know.
So next comes not knowing what the future holds. I shall say farewell, and I will see you at the next job. Or should I say you will see my handiwork at the next job? Remember, Miss Loria. Thank you. In their blood and from the gutter, Sam's creation, 44 caliber. What do you think, Christina?
I mean, there's a lot of repetition with the word job. You can look at that as he's been hired for the job. You can look at it.
Handiwork.
Multiple different ways. I look at it also with the book Job, because Eliphaz and Esau are both in the book Job.
The book of Job in the Bible.
Yeah.
The next Job. Meaning, could he be talking about a passage in the Bible, the next Job?
I don't know. I almost think it's an illusion.
So it's an illusion, but
it's just like trying to get his point across.
But let's look at it for a second though, because if he's saying the next Job, if he's talking about the Job in the Bible, Job in the Bible was tested, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Like, you know, he had boils all over him and things happened to him. People were killed around him and he was tortured and he still said he loved God.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
It could just be, like you say, an illusion, but maybe he is talking specifically in a way.
Well, and all of Job's friends got into trouble too.
Right.
With God, for basically shit talking God.
Right.
Yeah. I kind of look at the evolution of David Berkowitz in confinement. And how he went from, you know, the day he was arrested saying a dog told him to do this or whatever, you know, demon dog story you want to believe.
Kill.
Later on, you know, he starts really talking like he's a hitman, you know, in a satanic cult.
And, right. He's saying handiwork.
Yeah. I mean,
that's not. Yeah.
Well, there's references, you know, in the Bible and other sources to the devil's handiwork.
Right.
So, I mean, that's my handiwork is a reference to the devil. And then you blend that in with Job or a Job reference. And Job is one of the few chapters in the Bible where the devil actually makes an appearance. You have to kind of stop back and think about it.
Actually, that's very true. There's like a little round table meeting between the angels, Satan, and God in that chapter, if I remember.
Yeah, I mean, Job, I mean, if you really look at it, it comes across as a fight between two gods. Who's going to vie for humanity's attention and loyalty, and who's going to win?
Right. And just by the word handiwork, to me, that you know, if I was an investigator back then looking at this, I would think that using that term, it's going to rule out pretty much a randomness or a, you know, just creating chaos for no reason. Okay. It seems like using that word means that it implies that you're doing a job specifically, whether it's you're ordered to do it or you have an outcome that you want. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah.
So I think that's a very telling sentence in there. My handiwork at the next job. it's kind of like he's taking what he does seriously, calls it handiwork, right?
I think the next verse are actually pretty good. With all the nicknames that he's
okay. That's right. Next is, here are some names to help you along. Forward them to the inspector for use by the NCIC. The NCIC was like the investigative people, right? Is that what that is, Christina?
Yeah, it's the National Crime Information Center, and they mostly handle gangs, missing persons, and terrorism. There are other things that they handle too. Like,
were they involved in this case?
Not that I'm aware of.
It's interesting he would bring it up.
They suspected that he might be law enforcement because that was put in at the time, because not many people knew about that organization, and it was created in, I'm trying to think, maybe 1967 by J. Edgar Hoover.
It's a branch of the FBI?
It's been around for maybe 10 years at the time.
Is it like a branch of the FBI? Anybody know? Is it a branch of the FBI? I didn't hear you.
I think it's a branch of maybe the Navy. I'm probably wrong. I don't know. Don't quote me.
If it's a branch of the Navy, it would still be a federal.
It's federal.
It's all right. So that's interesting, because I know that up until the Borelli letter, there was no federal involvement. In fact, the Borelli letter went to the FBI.
It's also an organization, I'm refreshing my memory, individuals posing a threat to the president is deemed by the Secret Service, federal warrants, and three or more drug convictions. And they also deal with stolen property, such as license plates. But go ahead.
Okay, and then the nicknames are mentioned. The Duke of Death, the Wicked King Wicker, the 22 Disciples of Hell, John Wheaties, Rapist and Suffocator of Young Girls. What do you think of that? That's a heavy statement right there.
Sure.
Well, considering he mentioned NCIC and it was held back, This part of the letter was held back from the public, and it wasn't published until later.
Right.
Putting John Wheaties in, I'm really surprised that nobody, I mean, the cars were fairly well known within law enforcement, and you'd think that they would have known John's nickname. I'm surprised that they didn't put two and two together on that.
Well, like you say, it wasn't released to the public, though.
People would have come forward.
It wasn't released to the public, though. So this wasn't put in the paper, this part.
Yeah, I mean, like the Duke of Death, I know Maury Terry argued that John Carr used aliases on credit cards, often going by Baron. And
that's Michael Carr.
Duke is a synonym for Baron. But if you look at a Duke of Death, it's the first thing I think of is like tarot imagery, the death card, which is number 13 in the deck, depending on how it's ordered, which breaks down, 1 + 3 breaks down to 4. And once you start breaking things down, you'll see that 4s appear all throughout the letters.
Huh. What do you mean 4? I don't follow.
I'm like 44 caliber. Okay. 4 is significant, like in the process church, there are 4 gods, Jehovah, Satan, Lucifer, and Christ.
Right.
Where
is the 4 here, though, with the Duke of Death? I lost you on that.
Okay. Duke of Death. It's number 13. The tarot card is number 13.
Yes.
But if you break down the 13, 1 + 3 equals 4.
I see.
That's kind of how numerology works, you might have a different number, but everything breaks down.
Right.
Or you might have 22, but that breaks down to 4.
And like, then you have the Wicked King Wicker.
Like 22, for instance, 22 caliber shells were found at Carl De Niro's crime scene, and that didn't match the bullet that he was supposedly shot with. But I mean, they can't really tell because the bullet was deformed.
Right. But it was so damaged.
Yeah, the ballistics weren't great.
Casings were found at his crime scene.
Here's another numerology thing I just realized. The 22 disciples of hell. 2 plus 2.
3 equals 4. Yes.
It's a 2 plus 2 is 4. Uh-huh. It's also, you could also look at it as a tarot sign too. Hold on, I need to get into my notes. So depending on how you order the deck with the Aleister Crowley deck, the 22, there are 22 cards in the major arcana. The first card is the Fool. The last card can be the Fool too, depending on how you order it. So the Fool card is 0, which you would take 2 minus 2 is 0. Or if you put it as 22 in the deck, 2 plus 2 is 4. If you don't use the Fool card, then the last card, and you just keep it in the front, then the cards, the Aeon card, or A-E-O-N. But I mean, like referring to the 22 disciples of hell, I don't know. I mean, if you keep getting car references in here, like the Duke of Death and John Wheaties, you have to kind of wonder if the 22 disciples of hell isn't maybe a car reference too. And there was an article placed in the newspaper back in the 60s, implying that they were running an illegal gambling service through their answering service. I don't know the specifics of it.
Again, these are just allegations.
In the article, it says they have 22 employees. That's like the most important thing to me.
Oh, okay.
From the old, previous shootings and subsequent shootings,
because the walkway right here to my left and went through a hole in the fence and committed this murder. Now, he didn't get